The Knowledgeable Provider podcast is intended primarily to entertain, also to inform, but it is not a substitute for actual medical training and should not be used by anyone to diagnose or treat any medical condition in themselves or others. If you need medical advice, please make an appointment to see your own knowledgeable medical provider. The opinions expressed by me and anyone else who happens to appear on the podcast are solely those of the people expressing them and are not necessarily representative of any other entities. Other than the lunches at the office, I do not receive any sort of compensation from pharmaceutical or medical device companies, and I have no other relevant financial disclosures. Look, this is all for fun, okay? Don't sue me. All right, on with the show. Hey, welcome back to Knowledgeable Provider. I'm your host, Jody Marks. This would typically be an in-between episode, a critical incident episode, but I couldn't bring myself to call this a critical incident since I'm not really going to talk about anything critical. Of course, I've been doing the Neff Madness competition this year, and as of right now, it's going fantastic. We're down to the final round, and I've done way better than I thought I was going to do. I'm in the top 2% of about 1,100 entries, I believe. It's a little bit hard to tell looking at their information, but I think that's about right. I don't think there's a way I can win, but the name of the podcast is on the first page of results, and I think that crowd that would participate in that is made up of exactly the people who might be interested in listening to this podcast. So I'm really excited about the potential publicity. And if you're here because you saw the name of the podcast on Neff Madness, welcome. I hope you enjoy it and I hope you stick around and listen. I was thinking about what to talk about this week, and doing the Neff Madness thing got me thinking about other competitions and games I participated in. And there really aren't a ton of opportunities to do that sort of thing in medicine. I guess you could say it's a competitive field to some degree as far as getting into professional programs and medical schools and whatever, residencies. But with my background, EMS and nursing, I would say there's not a ton of competition for any of the educational slots or programs and whatnot. Maybe anesthesia school is probably the most competitive, I would think. But one time I did get to participate in a really neat competition when I was a paramedic. Every year, the certifying organization called ITLS, which is International Trauma Life Support, it used to be BTLS, Basic Trauma Life Support, they hold a little competition where teams come in and they're given scenarios and they have to show what they would do, just like working a real incident. And there's a crowd watching you and a grader watching what your team does. And they grade you based on the criteria that they set forth for how to do trauma assessments and how to treat trauma patients, etc. And I got to do that one year and it was really interesting. So that's what I'm talking about today. The year I participated was in 2011. The contest was held in Nashville, Tennessee. And for a little bit of background here, my ambulance service, HIMSI, had participated in the contest before. And if I remember right, it was several years previously, maybe 2007. I look back on the ITLS Facebook page and I recognize one of my former coworkers from a picture in 2007. So it may have been then. And I want to say it was somewhere far away, like in Italy, or I don't remember the details, but whatever year, the last year that they participated in it, they won the whole thing. You have three or four people on a team, and so you're all working together to handle these scenarios. And HIMSI's big innovation was to have each member of the team have their own like fanny pack with equipment in it. And apparently that just blew everybody away, and they did way better than all the other teams, and they won. Well, then they didn't go back for, I want to say 4 years. It was like several years in between when that team competed and when my team competed. And that's very HIMSI, by the way. They showed up, won, did great, and then didn't come back to defend the title. So I would say there was a little bit of pressure on our team, right? Because the last time we had competed, we were the winners. So we actually held tryouts. We had to go in just like when you do your national registry, they give you a scenario and you have to go through the motions and show what you would do and do a full trauma assessment and figure out how to treat the patient. So we had our own little competition there at our office in Huntsville. And I got chosen to be one of the four team members. The other three were John Holliday, D. Calcee, and Matt Hill. And Spencer Howard was in charge of putting the team together. He had put the team together that won the last time. And so we started having these practice sessions, these rehearsals. What would happen in the real competition? We would come in, we wouldn't know what we were walking into. We'd be given a scenario and we'd have to practice how we were going to handle it. And we met several times to do this. I don't think it was a weekly thing, or maybe it was, but we had several practice sessions. And it was really neat being a part of a team like that and just practicing together the stuff that we were out doing on the street anyway probably made us better medics as far as doing our actual jobs. So we went to the competition in Nashville. It was held at a hotel up there. And it was really interesting how they did it. They would have like a conference room in the hotel turned into this scene, this disaster scene or this trauma episode scene. And your team stood outside the door and waited. And when it was time, they opened the door and let you in. And it was just like you were walking into a real incident. You had no idea what you were walking into. And they would give you the scenario and then boom, you go to work. So our scenarios, I may have the order wrong, but the first one, I believe, they gave us a fighter pilot who had crashed his airplane. And I can't remember if they said he was ejected and we were just dealing with him like on the ground. In my memory, he actually was in some kind of fake aircraft that they had mocked up. I don't remember that part, but you know, very unusual scenario. And it's kind of neat because of course, you know, you're in this competition and you know, people are watching you and that makes it kind of an adrenaline thing because obviously you want to do well, you don't want to screw up. But then you also have this element of like, your brain knows it's fake in a scenario, but you still just go into that mode like you would be actually working the incident. So it's kind of doubly stressful that way. And so I want to say he was wrapped up in his parachute or we had to get him out of the plane. I don't remember which, but there's some element like that they actually created to make it more realistic. And then I remember that he was positioned face down. So we had to deal with that because typically when you practice doing your trauma assessments, you're practicing on a supine patient. So dealing with somebody who's in a prone position is a little bit more tricky because you have to figure out when do we roll them and how do we prioritize airway versus spinal immobilization, that sort of thing. It's a live person, an actor playing the patient, and they really have you go through the motions of like taking their clothes off. I think they're probably pre-cut or Velcroed or something, but you actually strip the model patients down to their underwear, which hats off to them for being willing to go through that. And other than actually doing any sort of invasive procedures, you're just doing what you would do. You're putting on bandages and slings and doing the whole spinal immobilization procedure. I remember specifically in that one when it came time to do vascular access. Oh, he had lost an arm. One of his arms had been ripped off. That was part of the scenario because I remember we had to go like across the room to get the other arm that was not attached to him anymore. But we ended up having to do an IV in his foot. I remember that. And I remember grabbing an IV catheter and taking the cover off of it. And like I said, your brain is in like real life mode. So I really had to stop myself from jamming the needle in this guy's foot because I'm like, hey, we're starting an IV. And I remember the guy, the actor said, you're going to put that in my foot? And I couldn't decide if that meant, is he just acting or do I really look like I'm about to stab him, which I kind of was? Or was he saying that because it was an unusual move in the competition? I don't know. I don't know where that came from. But I feel like we did pretty well in that scenario. We got him packaged. They have you package him, pick him up, move the patient into not a real ambulance, of course, but an area that's designated as the back of the ambulance. And so they time you. How long does it take you to get the patient assessed and treated and packaged and into the ambulance on the way to the hospital? And then you continue your treatment when you're in the ambulance. So I feel like that one went pretty well. The second scenario we were given was a mass casualty incident where some guy on a motorcycle had crashed into a cafe. And they had it very elaborately put together. Again, it's in a conference room in this hotel. So we walk in and they have this whole scene set up. I think they had overturned tables, like folding tables and chairs and stuff. They actually had a motorcycle laying on its side with the person there by it. And it was as if it was a real scene. So you had the victims laid out, but then you had all these other randos walking around and just generally being in the way as if it was a real incident that happened in a real crowded cafe. And fortunately, one of the things that we had practiced was dealing with this kind of a scenario with multiple patients, multiple people to deal with. And so I felt good about that. So we rolled right into it and I just did the whole triage thing. So we stopped, we're looking at this scene in front of us and I just start yelling. I say, hey, if you can walk, I want you to go with this team member right here. That clears out all the people who can walk. John Holliday went and dealt with all of them. And then you move to, if you can wave, please wave at me. So that gives you the victims who are on the ground, can't walk, but can still respond to commands and wave their arms and whatnot. And then the idea is the people who do not respond to you, who are on the ground, who don't wave at you, those would be your sickest or dead patients. So you respond to those first. So the way they had it laid out, I believe they had a mannequin who was dead. So I think that was my first stop. I went to the mannequin and the third team member, I guess, went to one of the patients who waved. So I stop at the mannequin, I go through the assessment procedure. And of course, with a mannequin, you have the grader standing there with their clipboard and they're answering your questions. And so we quickly determine that this patient is dead. We call that a death in the field, you know, black tag. I don't remember if we actually were using triage tags, but you call that person dead, you move on. So then my patient was the rider of the motorcycle. And so the way it was set up, we were all separated. So John was dealing with the crowd. D was assessing one victim, and I was assessing the other patient who was the rider of the motorcycle. I did my whole thing. I went through the whole trauma assessment with my patient, cut the clothes off or removed them or however they did that, had him packaged, and then I checked a blood sugar, and that turned out to be his problem. The scenario was that his glucose had dropped, and that's why he had crashed his motorcycle into the cafe, and there wasn't actually any traumatic thing wrong with him. So I went through the process of getting my IV, giving him some D50. They had him come around, wake up, like doing better. And I don't believe there were any actual significant injuries among the crowd. So John finished looking at all those people and then came back to help us. We loaded our two patients into the same quote unquote ambulance and left the scene. And I think we got docked on that one for not getting off the scene fast enough, because there were a few moments where we were kind of looking around at each other a bit unsure about how we were going to get both of the patients packaged and moved and whatnot. So I think we probably took too much time on that one. But other than that, I think we did all the treatment things appropriately. The third scenario we got was a killer. Oh my goodness. I was mad about this for a long time. So we walk into the conference room. The lights in there are very dim, and there's a washer and a dryer set up, like a home washer and dryer set up. And there's this frantic parent saying that her baby got in the dryer. It was in the clothes dryers it was running. So we go in. Of course, I have a flashlight in my pocket. So I got my flashlight in my teeth. And again, this is just, your brain just goes into like, this is really happening. So I'm doing exactly what I would do. You know, I've got my flashlight stuck in my mouth and I'm in the dryer assessing this. Of course, it was a mannequin. They didn't actually throw a real baby in there. And so the point of this is to challenge you, right? To confuse you and throw you off a little bit. So, you know, you don't want to like snatch the kid out of the dryer without knowing what injuries it has, right? If there's any kind of spinal injury, you still want to be careful about how you move the kid. So I just remember I'm in there, my arms are totally in this dryer. You know, I'm trying to assess the airway and figure out how sick the kid is. I'll never forget this. The drum of the dryer starts turning. They had rigged it up where there was a person behind it with a crank. And that was part of the scenarios. The damn dryer came on. And so the drum started spinning. And I'm pretty sure I went, shit. And I just snatched the kid out of there. Like I think I tried to mobilize the neck and the rest of the body as well as I could with my elbows. And I remember just like, whoo, like falling backwards out of the dryer with this with this stupid mannequin. And so once we're out of the dryer, then of course we just did our normal thing and assessed and treated and transported. And in the little after action report, there were all these little things that they had set up that we could have done or we could have asked for. They said, you know, you didn't ask anyone to turn the lights on. You know, they had the lights were dim in the room. And apparently if you had just asked, somebody would have gone and turned the lights on, which is like, okay. And then the whole thing about the dryer, they said you should have asked to unplug the dryer, which, okay, I'll give you that. That totally makes sense. And then there was something about the parent too, where you were supposed to get some information out of the parent or some way you were supposed to keep them calm or get them involved or something that maybe we didn't do. So I think that's the scenario that we did the worst on. But it was definitely a memorable scenario that they created there. At the end of the competition, when they were going to announce the winners, the way they were doing it was with a PowerPoint presentation. So they would show a picture of the team that was third place, second place, whatever. And of course, it was at the end of everything else they were talking about the competition and sponsors and who knows what else. So we had to sit there and wait for forever to get to the results. And then this technical glitch happened where whoever was running the slides advanced too quickly. And so before they even announced it, you saw the third place and second place teams. And we were not among those. You know, of course, we just knew that we had placed somewhere and we were like, we won because we weren't third or second. So we had to wait on them to go through third and second. And then first place was not us. We did not even place. I believe the team from Wake County EMS in Raleigh, North Carolina won the whole competition. So we had to go back home with our tails between our legs. We did not live up to the world champion team of years before. And as far as I know, they have not been back, but I hope they do. You know, HMSI just got bought by the Huntsville Hospital System, and now that system owns multiple ambulance services. So I think it would be very cool if they started sending a team to compete, because they have all the EMS talent in all of North Alabama just about to choose from. And I think it'd be really cool to see them go dominate again and represent our state. So that's my competition story. I will put a link to the pictures from the 2011 competition on the Facebook page if you want to click through those. And as soon as I find out the final result of the NEF Madness competition, of course, I'll let you know. Thanks for listening.
All right, that does it for this episode of Knowledgeable Provider. I'm your host, Jody Marks. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to like, subscribe, or follow on your preferred listening platform. Give us a nice 5-star rating and leave a nice review. If you'd like to help support the show, you can do that at patreon.com/knowledgeableprovider. And as always, stay safe, take care of yourself, and take care of your patients, in that order. The book.